Today is Friday, January 25th, the year 2002. I am Jeff Charnley, interviewing the Honorable Colleen McNamara, the immediate former chair of the Board of Trustees at Michigan State University. We are at her office in Lansing, Michigan, and this interview is part of the MSU Sesquicentennial Oral History Project, commemorating the 150th anniversary of the university that will be celebrated in the year 2005. Ms. McNamara, you see that we have a tape recorder here today. Do you give us permission to tape this interview?
I do.
I'd like to start with some background information about where you were born and raised, and where did you go to school prior to college?
I was born in Detroit. I went to school, public schools in Dearborn Township, would be Dearborn Heights. Actually, I didn't. I went to Catholic school. I went to Divine Child Catholic School until I was about in fourth grade, and then we moved to Livonia. And okay. When I was raised, the rest of my prior to college was in Livonia Public Schools. And then I came to Michigan State.
Uh-huh. What year did you graduate from high school?
1967.
67. Mm-hmm. And what was it that caused you to choose MSU for your university?
I think it may sound shallow, but I think a lot of kids make the decision. A lot of my friends were going to Michigan State, and that's where. And I wanted to be far enough away from my family. Uh-huh. I didn't choose it because I was interested in a course of studies. I was interested in going to a good school, uh-huh. But I, at that point, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I think I entered my first major was journalism. Because I'd been on, the yearbook and the newspaper at the high school, but mm-hmm. So I didn't really come as an extraordinarily serious student. Uh-huh. But I knew I wanted to go to a good school, though.
Was there anyone in your family let's say a teacher that had to influence you to come here? Or?
I think there were teachers actually at mm-hmm. our high school that were interning or whatever. They were doing their student teaching, mm-hmm. and they were from Michigan State. Yes, mm-hmm. as I recall, there was an English teacher, but no one from my family. My father went to U of D. Uh-huh. That's the only person who'd gone to college in my family before me, just uh-huh. my father.
What were some of your earliest impressions? Did you have any contact with campus before you came here?
I did. I went the year before. I went with a friend to her older sister to stay in the dorm. They have these brother-sister weekends, and they're very helpful. Mm-hmm. I was very enchanted by dorm life. I stayed in Brody by going to visit. So mm-hmm. That was the first impression. Coming onto campus, I think these are probably pretty standard impressions. It was so big, it was hard to find your way around. I chose not to room with anyone from my high school. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I moved into Holden Hall, I was the very first tenant in my room. It opened in 67. Mm-hmm. So there was an entire floor, mainly with freshmen because it was a new dorm. Mm-hmm. People weren't established, sophomores weren't really established in the dorm. So it was a very, we were all in it together. Very few people knew other people, and that was quite good. It made mm-hmm. us kind of stretch to get to know people.
Did Holden have some of the living learning at that time, or did that come later?
That came later. Okay. Yeah, they had some of the large classes, ATL and such. Television parts of them. Mm-hmm. You could go down with a coat over your pajamas down in the basement and watch the television. And it was a little different than it is now. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. that's the way it was.
Yeah. And what do you recall from some of your that was an exciting time to be on campus?
It was an exciting time, and for mm-hmm. me, it really was a change in who I was. I think, starting in 67, as I did, going through the, the late 60s and the early 70s, I was deeply involved in left-wing politics. I was in Students for a Democratic Society. I was involved in many demonstrations. I was arrested at the Union when 130 people were arrested. It was surrounded by the state police and campus police. I was deeply involved and deeply believed in the anti-war movement and in civil rights movement. It was a tremendous learning experience for me. I think I learned as much or perhaps more outside of the classroom during that period. Because it was a time when people seriously took very seriously that ideas were important and they really did, they were relevant to the world around us. And it was probably something, I think it's something that has stayed with me for my life, just realizing that people at that point, I think, were willing to take some real risks. We were willing to take risks with being arrested and all, for ideas, for important things that we felt were values. And that's, I think that really has, even though now I wouldn't take those risks. I mean, I really wouldn't. You know, I have a child now and mm-hmm. a job and a reputation and, you know, I make, you know, good money and I wouldn't want to risk any of that for certain kind of ideals. I'm so happy that I lived in a time and I lived through a period where I did take those risks and I had a lot of friends who were also doing that, and those friendships, I know college friendships last through your lifetime. Most, you gain a lot of friendships, but these were very strong and very mm-hmm. deep as a result of a lot of things we went through.
Mm-hmm. I've spoken with a couple other people who were involved in SDS at that time on campus, and were there any of the leaders that you remember?
Absolutely. Beth Shapiro, for one. Beth mm-hmm. used to
She'd
work.
She'd been brought up in terms of people I've talked with before,
okay.
but you knew her.
Beth, I knew Beth. Mm-hmm. She was several years older. In fact, Beth was a teacher. I took a couple classes from Beth. She taught sociology okay. classes. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Mike Price who still works on campus. Mike is, I think he's in, he works at Wharton Center, but Mike was very involved. There's a number of people still around that were involved at that time that mm-hmm. I see from time to time. Some are actually involved in state government, and I see them in the course of my own work, you know, and we kind of have this little sister and brotherhood because we know where we were back then. Yeah.
Were there any faculty that were particularly supportive that were involved in some of the demonstrations?
Oh, there were a number of them. In fact, I'm trying to think of some of their names. I'm not really good with names of lay for some reason. I don't know. They're a politician, that's not so good. But when I became a trustee, I was surprised to see several of them still on campus, still uh-huh. working, still clinging on to some very important sort of principles, and that was kind of heartening to know mm-hmm. that they were still there. Mm-hmm.
So you were there during the last years of President Hanna. Did you ever meet him, or
no.
did you see him in the course of?
No, actually, Wharton is the one that was the most had the strongest sort of presence during that time, and not necessarily in a good way. I mean, mm-hmm. he sort of was representative of the role of the university as. Being involved with South Vietnamese police and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. He kind of took that. I remember being in a demonstration that went to his house one night, and he came out with his robe on, and the same Coles house that I go to now for dinners with the trustees. I was outside clamoring that the president respond to these charges.
Some of your other studies, and what did you ultimately end up
I actually got a multiple disciplinary program degree in sociology and social science, actually. Mm-hmm. Social science. So it was a very nice liberal arts degree. I think it's the kind of degree that leads one to go into the kind of work that I'm in, public uh-huh. policy work. That kind of thing.
So. And what happened after graduation? What year did you graduate?
I ended up graduating. I think I stuck around a little bit too long. I think I graduated in 72.
72.
72 okay. or 73. I can't remember now. I should have graduated in 71, but I was having a very good time. and couldn't decide what I was going to major in, as it turned out. So I went, after graduation, I went to work at the state capitol in the mailroom, actually okay. in the Senate mailroom. And worked for the Senate for 5 years in various, I worked in other things besides the mailroom. Mm-hmm. And then there was a housing agency in Lansing called Housing Assistance Foundation that was looking for a director, executive director. That's, you know, it was a nonprofit, paid very little, but it was also the kind of work that I was really interested in, helping low-income people with housing problems. Mm-hmm. And I happened to have been on the board of directors of that little agency. And so I took that job and had that for about 5 years. Uh-huh. And then not making money, this is where I start to say I'm not going to take the kind of risks anymore in my life, but not making as very much money. Someone I knew about a job being the director of the Michigan Waste Industries Association, would be like in a state association like the one I work now. So uh-huh. I applied for and got that job and began in association work. Mm-hmm. And that was about 3 years. And then I came to the cable industry.
I see.
And I've been here for about 14 years now mm-hmm. as a director.
What degree did lobbying come into play in some of these jobs?
Lobbying is, well, the last two jobs is basically that's what we do. We try mm-hmm. to affect public policy in a positive way toward the industry and mainly state public policy. So we hire my association, both associations, I actually hire multi-client lobbyists. In fact, you saw him coming in. He was bringing in Girl Scout cookies, his Girl Scout cookie list from his daughter. But we hire multi-state lobby, multi-client lobbyists. We hire, I have attorneys, on, not on staff, but on contract.
And,
you know, a number of, we have a public relations firm from time to time helping us. There are four people on staff here right now. And we just, in terms of cable, we try to affect legislation that is affecting the industry.
So some of those earlier jobs, you got to know the legislature?
Well, they were very helpful, yes. Mm-hmm. Those were helpful jobs. Helpful in the sense of certainly in the mailroom was a great job to learn how things worked and who staff people. Many of the staff people who were at the same level as I'm at, I was then, as mail people, or, you know, they were working as pages, or are now either legislators or they're lobbyists. I mean, they're people, they're directors of departments. I mean, it, you know, they worked up through the process as I did. So it was just sort of similar to the college experience, you know, people that you kind of worked in the dredges of the bottom of the Capitol. You know, you really developed a lot of really great relationships.
When you worked at the Housing Authority, who was the mayor of Lansing at that time?
I think was that was
Jerry
Graves. I believe it
Graves?
Was Jerry Graves, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But it was the time Model Cities, that's an old, you know, an old program, so there was a lot of money for these kinds of programs, and so we got a lot of money actually to help people. It was a good, that was a good experience too, just to see how from the side of trying to get money from government, what that was like. It's all those kind of experiences really helped me in the job I have, you know, now.
Did you have, you stayed in the Lansing area then?
I did. A couple times I tried moving back. I would rather live in Southeast Michigan, but this is where my jobs have been. So.
And did you have any contact with the university after graduation in terms of, before you obviously became a trustee, but?
Yeah, you know, during the Housing Assistance Foundation job, we did, we had some contact with urban affairs programs.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one here in the Lejeune building in Lansing, and Rexel Morris, the director. He was director then, as a matter of fact. That was a long time ago. So we did a lot with them. So I knew some of the outreach kinds of things that the university had been involved in because of that community work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And any other contact with the president besides Horton before you entered the trustees?
No.
No.
Just, no.
Mm-hmm.
Just reading about everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How was it that you came to serve on the Board of Trustees, Michigan State? We can talk about how you first heard about there might be a vacancy or.
Right. Oh, that's an interesting idea. Well, see, these are some of the things that maybe 10 years from now I can talk more about. Because it's
What year were you elected?
I was elected, let's see, what year? Okay, I'm done at the end of this year for this term, and this is 2002, so 8 years ago would have been 1994. Five, and so I started in 96, right?
Okay.
4, 5, 6. No, 90. I'm sorry.
You elected in the 94 election?
93 or 94 election, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an 8-year term, so whatever 8 years be, anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
2002.
Yeah, this is terrible.
It's your time flies so quickly.
It sure does. It does, yeah.
Well, what I meant was obviously they're political. You have to get the.
They're totally
the
political. They're totally political on both the Republican and the Democrat side. I am a Democrat, and for our party, you really have to have support of organized labor to make it through your convention. I mean, frankly, the bigger fight in most of these races is to get through your own convention, because there's so many people who want these positions. There are only three universities that actually elect their statewide partisan election of trustees. So. I knew that Barbara Sawyer, who had been on the board, the Democrat on the board, was going to be not going to be nominated again by the Democrats for whatever reasons. That's up to her to talk about. But anyway, they were not going to nominate her again, so there was going to be an incumbent position that was open. I was running. I would have been running, and I ended up running with Joel Ferguson, who is also a Democrat, who was running for his second term. In all honesty, Joel did not want me to run with him on this ticket. He didn't, because Joel is very smart politically, and this was probably going to be a Republican year, which it turned out to be, and he knew that his only chance was that there were no women on the ticket for MSU, neither Republican or Democrat side. He didn't want to run with a woman. And the fact of the matter is, he tried very hard to get white men to
he
run.
He had another candidate that he was
He had another
in.
Candidate, yes, right. Who happened to actually be on my board of directors It was very clever of Joel. You can see how this sort of works. I mean, Joel is a very smart, savvy politician. But I, you know, I have to. I can't really be honest about this unless I talk about the role of my father. My dad is Wayne County executive and very, very powerful in the Democratic Party.
And that's Ed McNamara.
His name's Ed McNamara. Right, right. And so at the time, actually 2 years prior to that, I had tried to get on the ticket, and Labor was simply, they were really, whatever, angry with my dad or whatever, and it just wasn't going to happen. This was the year that it was going to happen, and we plotted and schemed, and I know it doesn't sound pretty, but it happened. I was nominated by the convention, and as it turned out, I came in second. I won, and Joel came in last. I mean, he was absolutely right. It was a Republican year. I mean, there was nobody else. It was not a Democratic year at all for these kinds of positions. So I was very lucky in that regard. And I was lucky because, probably because I was the only woman of the four people running, and I have a fairly good name to run statewide and a good base in the Detroit area. So those are all things.
And you come from a political family.
Right, and there was, although I have to tell you, running for these seats is nothing like running for, believe me, these seats are very hard to campaign for. Nobody really cares about them in the, you know, in the larger picture. What you really do is to go around to editorial boards and you sit down and you try to convince, you know, editors or sub-editors or whatever that they should endorse you. And you hope that their endorsements, you know, are made and for you, and that you prevail because with a little help from their endorsements. I didn't get the Free Press. I didn't get the Detroit News. I didn't get. I mean,
about the Grand Rapids Press.
I'm not sure whether I got them or not. I know I got Jackson Citizen Patriot because I knew I had worked with their editor in chief on some issues, but I got very few endorsements and won. So what does that tell you about endorsements? I don't know. Anyway, so that's all you can really do. I mean, I've known trustee candidates who've spent $100,000, and and they've lost.
And you didn't spend that much.
No, I think I spent about 20, but I don't know that I would do that again if I'm running again this coming year. I'm not sure I would spend that kind of money. I think that 20 made me feel like I was doing something, but I don't think it really did.
What would you say? Now, you mentioned editorial boards, but what would you say was your other successful area where you were able to attract voters, or at least the public interest, or what do you see as the real success?
Well, I think the success was that I was born female and had a really great name. I mean, the truth. But beyond that, I think in terms of trying to strategize, and we did try to, I'm pro-choice, Democrat, female. What I tried to look for were some crossover women Republican voters. So what I did was get the alumni list of women in Oakland County, because I felt that might be a more moderate female vote. And I wrote to all MSU female alumni from Oakland County. And that was pretty much my biggest mailing. And then I bought a little bit of cable, odd little cable. It's called Crawls, where underneath, like, the Weather Channel, it'll just say, you know, vote for Colleen McNamara for MSU Board of Trustees, only because it just kind of made me feel better to, you know, to buy cable.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an odd, funny little campaign, but it worked.
Was there anything you would have done differently, you think?
I wouldn't have spent $20,000. I don't think it helped, the $20,000. But, you know, what would I have done differently? No, I don't think so. And, you know, you have to make yourself feel like you're actually running, when, in fact, it really is the top of the ticket, even though my election does not prove that. It's really what happens at the top of the ticket that helps the education posts. Yeah.
What about the issue of your being an alumna of the university? Did that help or hinder?
I think it was helpful, but if I hadn't been, I think that people would have made an issue of it, but I'm not sure it would have. There have been other people on the MSU board who have not gone to Michigan State. In fact, there was one, I can't remember his name now, who went to U of M. He was appointed by one of the governors, I think Milliken.
But I didn't know if that was a factor.
I think it was more of a factor in the convention that they were really looking for people. They wanted to make sure people went to the universities that they were going to be representing.
This was one of the questions I prepared for later, but it might be an appropriate time to do it. Do you think that this method is of choosing for the three largest universities, having popular election, is a good idea, or should they be appointed by the governor?
Well,
what do you think?
Does this seem self-serving? But I do think this is a good. This is the best of, the best of, you know, in an imperfect world. I think this is the best way to choose at least the three top universities. I mean, the amount of money and the profile that these universities have, I think, requires a little extra attention to sort of a little de-democracy. And when we look at, just presently, we're in a situation right now with decreasing state revenues, and what's occurred, which is just ironic, considering that the Governor Engler, has been pushing for the non-election of these education posts, the most abusive, or perhaps the most outrageous, raise in tuition came by Central Michigan University, whose entire board is completely and totally nominated or named by him. They're all appointees of the governor. Mm-hmm. The boards that have looked a little bit more responsible have been, in fact, these kinds of elected boards who felt that they've had constituents and philosophical problems with raising tuition. And I think in some ways, if you're a true Democrat or a true Republican, you come to the table with a philosophy about education that is different from the other party, and I think it's healthy. I don't think it would be good to have all Republicans or all Democrats on these boards, because they really deal with deep philosophical, really they do, deep kind of philosophical approaches to the institutions. That's what they should do. I mean, sometimes they get caught up in the little, you know, housekeeping business, but that drives presidents crazy, of course. but they should be involved in the bigger questions about, you know, society and the university and how they interrelate. And I think that there is, if as long as Democrats are Democrats and Republicans are Republicans, I think that they come with a healthy approach that's different and good debates. We've had some, you know, we're 4-4 now, split on this, but we've had some very good debates on issues, domestic partners issues. I mean, those aren't huge issues, but they are issues that kind of reflect where the society is right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that they should remain.
So you see that elected as a strength in the system? That
absolutely. Absolutely. We would have 8 Republicans running, you know, on the MSU board right now because John Engler would, you know, and then you have situations like at Grand Valley. Domestic partners became, the domestic partner benefit issue was a huge debate issue on our board. Mm-hmm. At Grand Valley, whose entire board is appointed by the governor, with some very wealthy but conservative Republicans, there was no debate by the board. The president of the university knew that, you know, he simply had to go with a certain philosophical approach to it, and I think that's not necessarily healthy at the top. So
that's interesting. You mentioned the Central Michigan experience. I kept up on it because I have my bachelor's and master's from Central,
and then
my PhD is from Michigan State. So,
okay,
so I keep up on some of the stuff from Central, but the 27%. Tuition increase, the tuition guarantee that was in place for some years. What was your position on that when you first got on the board?
On the tuition guarantee?
Yes.
Well, I have really mixed feelings about this because there are a couple of people on our board who are very adamant about keeping tuition low for low-income people, moderate-income people. And philosophically, I'm there, but I also have this other sense of role that we have to maintain the quality of the university, that if someone's spending or if their family is spending $5,000, $6,000 a year in tuition, that they need to have a degree that has quality, that we can't be cutting ourselves down to the bone and lose that value for the students and for the state. So that's really been a challenge, I think, for every trustee in terms of tuition of late, because of the kind of resources we're getting in terms of revenues from the state, that you just have to kind of balance whether you've got to have the money to make to keep the quality of the university, and it's got to come from somewhere. And so 27% increase, I would never, that would be outrageous, but 9%, you know, at some point we've got to make sure that we don't make the university lose its quality and its value. So that's been the, and I've been very convinced that because the tuition guarantee was an initiative that, I had mixed feelings about it. I mean, in some ways I felt it was kind of a gimmick. You know, our president went around the country several years ago and really kind of talking it up and all. He felt it was valuable as a showing the world how we felt about keeping tuition down. But he also felt it was a very good tool internally, so that the rest of the faculty and the deans and the colleges understood that he was serious about fiscally conservative internally as well. So he found a very good tool. So I was willing to support him all along on the tuition guarantee, but not rapidly. And but when this really serious crisis came from the state in terms of revenue, his recommendation of 9% increase, really, to me, I felt that he really had done the job of assuring himself that that was, he couldn't do anything less than that in terms of, because of the my historical experience with him, that tuition guarantee was so valuable to him. Mm-hmm. So I really felt that he was sincere about that and that I wasn't going to try and nickel and dime him down. Mm-hmm. I was very confident, at least in this. I mean, there are other things around, you know, when dealing with the president that I have some, you know, mm-hmm. let's play mm-hmm. with this. But I really trusted his numbers on this because I knew how much he felt about keeping tuition down. So it's had an interesting little history, the tuition guarantee, and I'm afraid it may be gone.
What were some of the other issues before you became chair of the board? What were some of the other issues that you were particularly interested in?
Well, you know, it's the experiencing of being a trustee is an interesting one. You come to a campus where the model we all have, and we all have it on the board, is this corporate top-down, you know, you're the board of directors, and you have your CEO, the president, and, you know, you tell the university what to do. Well, the university doesn't see the world that way, and it begins to dawn on you little by little that the faculty believe that they are the university, that the faculty believe that they, in essence, run the university, and that, you know, you are in some ways sort of, and the president as well, are just kind of off to the side doing whatever it is you do, but they believe that their contributions are much more important, and you know, it's a very, I mean, you could cynically you could say, oh, what a quaint little sort of medieval, you know, Oxford kind of idea. But in some ways, I've come around to be quite thankful for that. I think that it adds something really wonderful to the. It is the university that mm-hmm. faculty are. So that's one huge revelation that begins to dawn on you, one hopes, mm-hmm. if you're a trustee. Now, some trustees will choose not to mm-hmm. recognize that.
The corporate model still applies.
Exactly. Well, we'll just tell them we're doing this. You know, mm-hmm. who cares what the faculty say about this? We're just going to vote for it. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas there's this whole process. The provost is a wonderful actor in all of this because mm-hmm. she's very, very diplomatically tries to tell the trustees, you simply cannot just say, who cares what the students and faculty think? We're going to, you know, at least sit and listen to what, you know, wait till it perks up through mm-hmm. the university. The second thing that is really interesting that sort of dawns on you if you're really going to get anything done is that you're coming into a campus with 50,000 people. Most of them are very smart. Most of them are very self-motivating. Most of them are very creative. And they really are very happy to get involved in any kind of intellectual anything, you know, and give their opinion on everything. And there's so many things going on. There's so many different endeavors. You can't know about everything unless you're the provost. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say, Luana Simon is one of the most intelligent people I have ever had the privilege to know. She knows everything that's going on campus. Everything, I'm telling you. You know, the scientific side, the arts and letters, I mean, she's just amazing. But anyway, as a trustee, you can't. Mm-hmm. So you have to sort of make a decision. Either you're going to be a real generalist and just kind of look at the budget and really general things, or if you want to get something actually done, you have to find an area of interest to yourself and just focus home right in. You know, some trustees, as you're probably all too aware, choose athletics. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's their area, and that's, you know, they focus right in on that. For me, it was urban affairs. How the university interacts with and affects the urban life of Michigan. Now, the realization became that just because I was interested in it didn't mean that anything was going to change on campus. You know, a trustee just doesn't issue an edict, okay, you know, we're going to do even, you know, try to convince the president to do it. That's not an interest for him. It's not. I mean, he's got other interests, and he found, I'm sure, as much as I did, that just because he's interested in study abroad didn't mean the entire campus was going to all of a sudden hop to and get interested in study abroad. He had a lot of work to do on campus to get that achieved. So that was really a revelation to me, is that to try and get some sort of movement on urban issues with the university, I had to work some things. I needed the provost to kind of help me, and she was very helpful. But I learned how things moved on campus. What the provost did, there's this, and you're probably aware of it, at the beginning of each year, there's sort of a thing that each college does that talks about, and there are a consonant, there's some letters that mm-hmm. it's called, but where they talk about what they intend to do, and the dean puts this together. And she inserted a question that just said, what is the college doing around urban issues? I mean, all she did was put the question in, but the very fact that the question was in there indicated that the provost thought that there was something important about being involved in urban issues, and that was very good. She also took an interest in the urban affairs program, changed the dean, got involved with trying to reorganize it, put some of her, she's got a pot of money that she uses for bits and pieces. She took some of that money, did a study, did a survey across campus, how do people feel about the urban affairs program. She got one of her provosts, assistant provosts, to be sort of a center across the campus of collecting urban affairs, urban issues, who's doing what across the campus. I mean, she was very, very helpful. Now, it didn't make a big jump, but as I've learned, you don't make big jumps at a university. The little movement is probably as good as you're going to get, and probably, you know, is more thoughtful anyway. Mm-hmm. It's not the flash fad and, you know, the latest fad. It has some longevity to it. So those are the things I really kind of learned over the last few years about being a trustee and what you can actually do and get done. So in terms of issues, that's where my issues were, sort of my focus was. Now, as you know, everybody who was involved knows, we had all kinds of other issues. I mean, we were probably one of the biggest periods of building on campus ever, before Hannah, I mean, mm-hmm. in the 50s with Hannah. And that was fascinating. Not knowing anything other than that, though, it seems sort of natural that we'd have a building a week being put up, you know. So the building was fascinating. The issues around